Jean Carragher, President of Capstone Marketing. I am excited to be talking today with Tom Hood, Executive Director and CEO of the Maryland Association of CPAs. Tom is a nationally recognized author, speaker, and consultant. He was named the fourth most influential leader in the CPA profession in Accounting Today's 2012 list of the top 100 most influential people, his eighth time on the list. Accounting Today described Tom as the relentlessly forward-thinking Hood is a constant force dragging the profession, yes, with some kicking and screaming, into the future. And Tom has received many other awards, including being named to the top 25 thought leaders in public accounting by CPA Practice Advisor, the top 25 thought leaders in public accounting technology by CPA Technology Advisor, and one of the top 25 online influencers in talent management by HR Examiner. These awards and recognition reflect Tom's leadership in helping CPAs shape their future through his work at the Maryland Association of CPAs and the Business Learning Institute, a center for the development of leadership and strategic thinking skills for CPAs. Tom, we finally met last month at the CCH Users Conference in San Diego. I appreciate your time today for our Capstone conversation.
Well, it's great to be joining you, Jean, and I'm a big fan of your work and the work you do together with Rick Tilberg. So, mutual admirer, say.
Thank you very much. I know it's a love fest here between all of us. Tom, when I was at the CCH Users Conference, you gave an excellent presentation called Building the High Performance CPA Firm. And I know you had a big crowd in there, and everyone was really paying attention to what you had to say. And you had mentioned four things that were necessary to build a high-performing firm, and they were engagement, alignment, commitment, and accountability. And I'd like for us to talk today a little bit about each of those things, starting with engagement, because you mentioned that most people aren't engaged because their work isn't inspiring them to do their best. How do you inspire people to do their best?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny because the engagement stats are not just in the profession, but they're everywhere. And I think the average partner would tell you, and actually it's even more at the what I'd call the manager level, the issues of inspiring what I like to call an ADD workforce. You know, right now and today, with all the distractions and the pace of change, it's as if we all have attention deficit disorder. And that goes from the, you know, top of the organization to the very entry-level position, right? Everyone's got their iPhones, Blackberries, other devices, laptops going all the time. And so this idea of inspiration is really the kind of answer or the antidote to this idea of the ADD workforce. So, you know, it at the end of the day, you can lay out an environment that's inspiring, and you can engage people. And so we like to say that I have like the four R's. Return on attention is what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that? Well, it means that you have to engage people in the work that they're doing. And often that starts at the very top of an organization with its strategy. Now, it's funny because it was interesting in that two major sessions we did out there at CCH, there was some interesting – I used an interactive device to kind of get some stats from the group. And almost half of the group did not have a strategic plan, 46%.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we got to are your partners all on the same page – only 40% said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we said, does your team or staff understand your strategy? And only 20% said yes. 39% said maybe.
Which is basically no.
Which is basically no. Right? Then I asked, is your vision and strategy inspiring? So there, only 6% strongly agreed. 34% said they agree. 41% said they weren't sure, and 20% strongly or disagreed. So I think that's where really where I think I start, Gene, in that if you aren't making your workplace inspiring from, I like to say, the start with why idea, which comes from Simon Sinek.
Absolutely. That was one of the books you recommended that is now on my bookshelf, and that is the first one I started reading.
It's a great
one. Of all of the recommendations I received over the course of those days. Amazon was making deliveries to Capstone Marketing, and that why book is the first one.
So, you know, it really does get to the why, and I like to call it, here's the generic CPA firm vision statement, which is get more clients and make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not an inspiring vision statement, and in fact, that's usually not the why.
Right, because I found, so, you know, this is absolutely dovetailing into issues, you know, that I've done, you know, research on, and of course in helping CPA firms with their marketing planning and business development. It does start with that vision and why you're in business, because you need to get all of your people on the same page and excited about what you want to achieve together. And if the team doesn't know and isn't in agreement or alignment, as you would say, about what that is, you're really on a road to nowhere, because there is no common end game, so to speak.
That's right. There's no, I mean, like And what you just said, which really does get to the next piece, which is alignment. So engagement says first, how am I engaging my people at all levels in the firm? What we hear from, like in this session we did, which was quite a bit of partners, and the firms were really varied. We had firms that were up to almost a quarter of them were greater than 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a nice evenly split up group from small practices, you know, 1 to 20 up to greater than 100. And so consistently across that, what they said was their biggest problem. So let me give you a couple of the sound bites that came in from their answering the questions while we were in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, operating as a shared vision versus a shared service firm, right, book of business based. Operating as one firm mentality, getting everyone on the same page. There was just, you know, comment after comment about getting their partners in alignment. And it's funny because as I was out there at that conference, a good friend of mine was out there, a firm in Georgia, a large firm. He said he got sick of going to CCH conferences, seeing all this great stuff, going back home and having all of his partners basically, you know, just not be willing to go there. So he took all 11 of his partners with him to this conference, so that they could see it firsthand. And like, that's symbolic of the challenge, because things are changing faster now. And that means it's more urgent than ever to get people on the same page and keep them on the same page.
Well, and I would say that it's more urgent than ever for firms to have the strong leadership that's willing to do the hard work to make
Absolutely.
That happen.
Absolutely. So engagement says, do I have a strategic planning process? And I like to say process rather than the episodic, let's do one every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be an ongoing process of, we like to say, what, you know, sight and insight. What do I see happening in the world around us with our clients and in our market? And the insight is the, so what's it mean to us? And then that gets to what should we create from what we now know? And that should be literally happening as major things change, or at least annually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And right, so that's the engagement part. I need to engage my partners in a planning process so that we understand our why and we develop strategies that are responsive to the changing marketplace, responsive to our customers, and in line with our vision and our purpose.
Mm-hmm. And I think this gets to a point, because I made a note of this too, because I just loved it. You talked about getting partner consensus, that they either have to like it, love it, or live with it.
Good work.
I thought impressed. That was brilliant.
That's what we use when we do strategic planning. That is the way we call it the no bitch rule, because if you set that up, right? If you set that up as your rule, then when they leave the planning meeting or the meeting, they can't go back and say, oh, no, that was full of stuff there. I didn't agree with it, right? Because they at least said they could live with it.
Right.
Which then says you aren't going to go out and poo-poo it or no-no it after the fact.
Right. So they're not going to be the obstacle. They're not going to be the obstacle for their other partners and team members to be successful.
Exactly. And then, you know, this is what happens all the time. They have these meetings. A couple people, like, dominate and say, this is what we're going to do. Other people don't say anything, which everyone takes as approval, right?
Right.
But when they walk out of there, they start complaining about it.
Right, because they don't have the courage to actually speak to the. This is conflict avoidance.
Yeah, and it happens, and then they go out and try to actually rile up more people to join them in their quest to block whatever's going on.
So, as a managing partner, how do you work with a partner like that?
By using those rules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you set those rules up and say these are the rules. And everyone agrees to those rules, you state right up front, that means you have to speak up if you really can't live with something we're talking about. And we'll wrestle it until we all agree and get there.
Mm-hmm.
But then once we're done, you can't go out of here and change that story
right.
with the rest of the staff or other partners.
And if they do, then the managing partner needs to be willing to have those difficult conversations with that partner.
Yes.
Or other consequences, if you will.
Absolutely. That's the start of the alignment process, right? Because
mm-hmm.
The favorite quote I love to start a lot of these planning sessions off with is when they interviewed, when they talked to Napoleon Bonaparte about why he was such a successful general, he said, well, it's actually quite simple. The first thing I do before I go into battle is I get all my men facing the same direction. That's what we mean by engagement and alignment. So engagement is engaging them in a strategic conversation so
yeah.
that you can get the best of all their thinking, right, about what's happening with the customer, the market, trends, issues, those kinds of
right.
things. And the alignment is I then get consensus around that, and then I can take that strategy and start to articulate it. Like I'm a big fan of a one-page strat plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then use that strategy to line further down your organization. So that strategy should then inform and align with the divisional or departmental practice strategies, tax, audit, consulting.
Mm-hmm.
It should align by office if you have multi-offices. And at the end of the day, it should go all the way down to a line of sight so that the receptionist can actually articulate her key objectives and how they might tie in and support the firm strategy, right? When everyone can understand the strategy and point to how they help it, then you've made what I call the right level of alignment.
Right, because you've got all your people engaged and involved and understanding where the firm is going and why it's doing that and how it's going to do that.
Exactly. And that leads to commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's where I like to call it the discretionary effort. But that's when you get both their head and their heart. Because let's face it, what really wins games? It's the passion.
Right.
It's the discretionary effort that people give you because they're committed to what you're doing.
So this is, in a way, creating raving fans out of your own people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because there's always this constant dialogue in the profession about customer service, right? Where does great customer service come from? All the research, this goes all the way back to Harvard, but, you know, David Meister, all these the gurus in the profession for years, it all gets to if you really take care of your people right, if they're trained right, and they're engaged in how and what and why you exist, then they are going to deliver great service. Like, that's the secret to great service.
Right.
And somehow we lose sight of that easily. And so I think if you can get to this notion of driving everyone into the why and how and what you're focusing on strategically, that alignment will drive this you know, whole next level of commitment. And then that's where accountability comes from, right? Because people know what's expected of them.
Right.
And you don't have to micromanage them. They'll actually do it willingly. because
and that's
they're
a big
part
word,
of,
that accountability word. It's always been such a big one.
Oh, it's huge, especially
in our
accounting
profession.
Yeah.
Right.
My partners aren't accountable. Well, why not? Well, I can't fire them because they're partners. Right? That's where all this goes. And you're like, well, then you need to engage them and get them, you know, inspired and connected. And
right.
I think that's what, you know, that's, I think, some of the missing ingredient. Now, one other thing about alignment that's important, because not only is it about aligning people so they understand their role, but, you know, to your point, all the marketing and creative stuff that you're doing to try to help them get recognized, build their brand, that should be aligned to their strategy as well.
Right.
And then their training, right? This is the other one, the kind of the third leg of the stool, mm-hmm. is lining up the what I call the return on people. So now you've engaged them, gotten them connected and all that. Now you need to give them the skills that they need to do their job. And that gets to the whole notion of a strategic learning plan mm-hmm. that kind of focuses on, well, if this is my strategy, then what am I doing to make sure I'm training my people in those key areas?
Right. Right. It absolutely is, because, you know, when I looked at that, you know, engagement and inspiring them, that is absolutely related to marketing and business development, because if your people are working on challenging, exciting clients, they're going to be more engaged.
Absolutely.
And that also, you know, obviously, you know, the marketing component is part of that strategic plan and that vision and the growth of the firm and how that's going to happen, what you're going to do, you know, what is your brand, what training are we going to give our people to help them be more proficient marketers, you know, and business developers.
Yep.
It does all, and that obviously relates to client service as well. It all comes full circle.
Yeah, I mean, and so the great companies, right, they get that stuff right. I call it a systematic and strategic approach,
mm-hmm.
right? I know what's important. My people know what's important. They all know how they fit into our strategy. That's the strategic part, and then it's systematic. Now I drive all of my systems, my people systems, my marketing systems, right, my
mm-hmm.
selling systems, all those systems need to support the strategy.
Right, that there's a specific way to do things, and
you're
giving your people the training to do that, so you have that consistency.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Tom, what are some of the best practices you've seen with CPA firms related to accountability? What are firms really doing right?
Well, you know, probably the best ones I've seen, and it's funny because some of them have all these, you know, matrices and scorecards and all kinds of stuff. And those are good, but sometimes it's like improving your golf score. If you've got 10 things you're trying to work on, a golf swing, it's
mm-hmm.
not easy to improve along all those dimensions. I like to say it's as simple as like top fives. So literally what I've seen that's working really well is a review system, and it's not just at the partner level, but cascaded all the way down, but essentially takes if this is our strategy and these are our values, there's two components to it. One is you set your goals in alignment with the firm goals. So here's the firm strategy. Here's the six things we think are important. Now, you are head of the tax division. So your tax division should be in alignment with the firm. So what are those top fives? And then if you're the tax partner, what are your top fives? And the key is that someone is remember in grade school when they used to teach you like language, and they would have a little 8.5 by 11 sheet, and it was like a T account. So on the left side would be maybe pictures, like here's a cow and a dog, and right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the right side would be the names. They would be all jumbled.
Right, and you have to match them up.
And you
uh-huh.
had to, like, draw a line to those, right?
Yes.
So, I literally, that's how we do our strat plan on a page. We say, here are the five major strategies of the firm, right? So here's the purpose, vision, values, and here are the five major strategies for the next couple years. So we list them down, 1 through 5. And then now if you're the tax division, you put your top five there, and you draw a line where there's a connection. Now, it shouldn't be a one-for-one, because there's going to be some goals that are at the sub-level that are different than the top level. But by golly, there better be at least probably two that you could say, this is connected to the firm's growth strategy, and this is connected to the firm's talent development and retention strategy. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So literally, if you cascade that down, so imagine five goals at the top, five goals then at the tax level, five goals at the partner level, and then the people are doing the same thing. So if I'm an audit senior, I'm going to say, what are my top five goals this year? And I, you know, again, at least a couple should point to the audit division team that ultimately will find their way all the way up to the firm level.
Right.
And if people understand that, so that's number one. Number two is then evaluating people on values. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where I know some CPAs really get stretched because I compare it to Zappos. I don't know if you've heard the stories about Zappos,
yes.
The online shoe retailer.
I've heard some, yep.
So anyhow, I got a chance to visit out there and spend some time with one of their culture people. But the value issue, and this gets back to culture. So if you ask a firm, do they have a good culture, many of them will say yes. Most firms, maybe not most, many firms have culture by partner or culture by office. Or culture by practice, right?
You are absolutely right.
You've seen it. You can experience it.
I have
it.
Absolutely seen it. Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you think about it, and we're doing the AICPA Leadership Academy. We've done a bunch of leadership training for manager-level CPAs all across the country. And consistently, these folks are frustrated and confused because they're working in firms that have many cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're trying to like get people inspired, if you confuse them about how they need to behave and which values they need to bring forth and they're different, that's a pretty challenging environment.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of what are your firm, you know, key values and principles, What are the kind of norms of behavior that we expect here? And really understanding that and then evaluating people on that. Like, how are you doing against those values?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other area. And many, this is the area that seems to be completely non-existent. I mean, I've seen some firms beginning to implement it as they've done really good articulations of what their strategy is and what their vision is. But my point is, if I go back to the original stat we started with, which is like 45% of the firms in those sessions out in San Diego did not have a strategic plan at all.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that their performance could dramatically improve if they would get alignment, which then gives you a consistent culture. See, the whole point of this alignment exercise back to strategy is that that's the beginning of creating a consistent culture.
Tom, is this a process that can be undertaken by younger partners or without senior leadership in a firm?
As long as they have senior leadership buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is yes, many of them, and we've seen where it's starting to happen. So young partners, even managers who are given permission, could begin to create that. Because here's where the real difference happens. It's really between the manager and the next level employees,
mm-hmm.
the staff and the seniors. Those happen to be mostly members of the millennial generation. Right, most managers are Gen Xers, and this is that whole generational thing that you're hearing. So they get inspired and give you their effort when they believe they're working for something that matters.
And they are the future of their firms.
No question. And so my point would be, yes, if you were a managing partner and you could empower your manager team and maybe even a couple young partners to take on that kind of effort, I believe you could make some significant improvement there. But so this whole idea of performance management, right? Performance management is not going to ever get much better. I mean, you can add all the systems on top of it you want, but if you don't have a consistent culture, you're not going to be able to get any kind of consistent evaluation. So what I hear all the time from young professionals is, imagine what it's like when I have to know, you know, Jean's personality and her quirks and Tom's personality and his quirks, and they're two very different people. So they expect and make me work completely differently when I'm assigned to their jobs.
Right.
How could you ever be inspired and motivated around a job like that? And
Right.
oh, by the way, when Gene runs out, Gene goes and gets another client and has a whole other set of team, and assigns me to another partner. Now I got to learn a whole other set of behaviors that I'm expected to do.
And we wonder why they leave the accounting profession.
I think
the best time to leave public accounting is between 3 and 6 years of experience.
And that's it, right? Because I'm going crazy trying to understand the different cultures and how I should succeed, right? I mean, think about it. If you're trying to worry about your career, how do you begin to be successful? I have to think through like all these different nuances. Well, how's Gene work against that? How's Tom work against this?
Right.
Anyhow, so I think performance management is, people are going to be chasing that forever when it's a lot simpler.
Right. In focusing in on these areas that we've been talking about, the engagement, the alignment, the commitment, the accountability, and having that strategic plan that's aligned.
Throughout all the other things you do in the organization.
Right, right, exactly. Tom, this is awesome. I just have two last questions for you. What, based on everything that we've talked about here today, what is your best piece of advice for current firm leadership?
Find your why and get a strategic plan.
Okay.
And begin to align that through your organization.
Okay. And then what's your best piece of advice for future firm leadership?
Well, it would probably be the same if you're a future firm leader and you've already done that, then what I would say is your job would be to take it and move it throughout the organization. So the best practices that I've seen, and I've been with a couple firms, and interesting enough, this could be one of the firms is one of my Maryland firms, 150 people, multiple offices. The other one's a smaller firm. It's about 45, but growing rapidly. Both firms engage every one of their people in their strat plan.
So you're getting that extra buy-in.
That's
and
exactly
that inspiration,
right?
Because you're being asked for your input from the start.
Yeah, best quote I know is, people, in order to get buy-in, people have to weigh in.
Oh, that's a good one.
And so if I was advising a younger leader, because here's what happens. The older established leaders, for the most part, aren't quite ready to involve that next level. They like to stay at the partner level. The younger partner, or the one coming into leadership, often is maybe a little more tuned into the notion of connecting and collaborating more. They would be the ones more open to having that meeting. Now, I would say if you haven't ever done it before, and you haven't done it with your partners at a first step, then you wouldn't want to open it up to everyone else until you make sure those folks are on the same page. But I would say it's a first step, get all your partners' alignment, and then second step, see if you can make that circle bigger and involve more and more people in your team.
Right.
You'd be amazed at the ideas and stuff, energy that comes out of your staff, even the admin staff, the receptionist and the folks supporting the different teams in your firms. You know, it can make a huge difference, and they all have some great ideas, and then they get inspired.
Right, absolutely. And that's where we started our conversation today, wasn't it, being inspired?
You're right.
Right. Well, we've been talking today with Tom Hood, the Executive Director and CEO of the Maryland Association of CPAs. Tom, thank you so much for your time.
Gene, thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you in the future.